Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 22nd day of July 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. He and Jackie Vakes are swapping days this week. She'll be with us on Friday. We'll also talk today with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, get an update on crop conditions there and on their basis levels, which have been very, very strong. And as we finish up the half hour together on the closing market report from Illinois Public Media, we'll check the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, we'll check the numbers as they finished up. September contract in the corn pit down 3¾ today at 402¾. December at $4.13½ a bushel, down 4 cents. And March corn down 4¼ at 423½. July down 4¾. December of next year down 3 cents. August soybeans at $10.20¾ finished 2 cents higher. September down 7, $9.99½. November at $9.95½, down 9¼. And January beans at $10 and a penny, down 9¾. Next year's July 10¼ lower, and the next year's November down 9¼ cents. Bean meal up $3.60 in the nearby August. Bean oil 58 cents lower. Wheat futures finished the September contract in the soft red, 8 cents lower at $5.16¾. December down 8¾, and July of next year down 9. It at $5.38¾. The hard red September down 5¾ at $5.12¼, and July of next year at $5.62¾, down 4¼. Live cattle futures in the August down 72½ cents, $144.42½. The final trade, or rather the last tick on the day, and August contract $212.32½ in the feeder cattle, currently down 75 cents. September down 85 at $210.62½. August lean hogs up $2.57½ at $78.45 at this hour. The October at $65.40. That's up the $3 limit. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can find all of our programming online from the Opening Market Report to the Closing Market Report and everything in between at WILLAG.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's check some of the outside markets at this hour. In the energy sectors, crude oil September contract at $49.16 a barrel is $1.70 lower. It's gone down to $49.06 for the day. Ethanol futures at $1.53 2 cents is $0.04 higher. Gasoline on the Arababa wholesale price down $0.05 at $1.86½ on its last tick. And the August contract for heating oil, and these are all 10 minutes delayed, of course, at $1.67 1/10. That's 0.6 cents lower. Natural gas for the day at $2.88 8 cents is up 0.6 cents. The outside markets show the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,776, down 90 points. The U.S. dollar at 97.725 is up 0.299. And gold on the day with a high at $1,102.75 and a low at $1,085.50 at $1,091 on its last trade, down $12.50 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the Urbana-Champaign area's National Weather Service. Mostly sunny and a high of 82. Tonight cloudy and a low of 61. Tomorrow sunny and 83. And Thursday night clear and 64. Friday sunny skies and 84. Friday night cloudy and 67. And on Saturday, we'll see sunny skies and 87. Saturday night, a chance of thunderstorms. They'll back in the forecast now, and a low of 70. Sunday, that will continue, but mostly partly sunny and 86.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
On this Wednesday afternoon, time to check the commodity markets and how trade finished up in Chicago. Mike Zuzulo is here. He swapped out positions this week with Jackie Vanks. She'll be with us on Friday afternoon. He's, of course, with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Mike, thanks so much for being with us. We started this morning by talking a little bit about the gold futures and what that meant on the global scale for the economy. I would imagine you have been thinking more about that through the day and what it means to the commodity markets. Did you come up with some new and interesting thoughts?
You know, it's funny you asked, Todd, because I had several calls after the AM radio and talking about it with clients about what you and I talked about. And I think it's probably good to have a little bit of perspective. I think what we're looking at here is a market, and the crude oil is an exceptional example today, and you're talking about the build there and the fact that we're seeing 464 million barrels of stocks now, which is about 100 million barrels above the five-year average, puts you in the mindset of what we were talking about with the gold and China and so on and so forth. So I went back and looked at where the global trade was, the GDP in U.S. dollars, back in 2001, back in 2009 at the peak of the financial crisis and where it's at right now to get an idea of whether it's really justified fundamentally supply and demand wise, not investment wise, but supply and demand wise where we're at. And essentially China's economy has doubled from $5 trillion to $10.4 trillion since 2009. Our economy in U.S. current dollars is up 20% from 2009. And yet the crude oil is at January levels. The corn is at January 2009 levels. Silver is $2 an ounce from January 2009 levels. Gold's about $160 an ounce from the 2009 levels. And wheat is actually 30 cents a bushel under 2009 levels. And so I think from a value level analysis, and that's really what I try to do for clients, from a value level analysis, this doesn't make a lot of sense as far as why the commodities are getting hit so hard. If we're talking about a slowdown in China or we're talking about a slowdown in the United States, we're not slowing down. We're still growing, just at a slower pace.
So did you come to any conclusions? And I'm thinking about a couple of things. So if we're at a new plateau, and you've heard Daryl Good and Scott Irwin talk about this before, for the commodity markets, which roughly speaking would be double, and it's a bit more than that, but double the previous plateau. So for corn, it was 242. Not quite double, I should say that. I think they're around 460 as a midpoint. Can we put that into perspective, or should we put that in perspective for crude oil, which would put crude oil at, what, $63 or $66 a barrel, I suppose? And I don't know what the gold futures would look like.
Well, you're probably talking about $1,100 to $1,200 an ounce for a midpoint for the gold if I had to eyeball it with that $60 to $65 barrel crude oil. But the unleaded gas number today on the weekly update was the second highest on record for demand. So unleaded gas demand going all the way back to 1991 when the EIA started keeping records is the second highest on record at this stage for demand. And so I would simply say and reiterate what we talked about this morning. We're at a technical and investor sentiment negative point in the market. This is macro related. It has very little to do with supply demand fundamentals, especially when you wrap your hands around the individual states' good to excellent conditions. And I think it's important for cash marketers to keep that in mind as we get to that August 12th report. I think in the very short term, you've got some very key retracement levels, 50% retracement levels with the new crop corn and new crop beans are lining up very closely with the 200-day moving averages for both of those. And so you're talking about the 970 to 975 level when it comes to the November beans as very strong support. And you're talking about the 405 to 408 level with December corn for both of the retracement and the 200-day moving average as very strong support. And I think those two levels should hold if what you and I are talking about has validity to the market right now, should hold going into the August report.
Can you tell me which of the commodities you believed are currently undervalued? I think this is the way you sometimes put the market in perspective.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking a medium term, 6 to 9 month perspective, I think corn would be number one because it is one of the higher costs to produce, and we've seen acreage drop. And I think given the supply side economics, it's probably number one on my list. I would say silver is probably number two, and I would say probably number three, depending on what USDA gives us for acres and yield, we might actually move the beans up to a number three position. I'm not sure that crude oil is very undervalued right now from a 6 to 9 month mindset, Todd, just because of how much production we've taken offline that could come back online relatively quickly. That's the side of the equation that really helps the overvalue, undervalue analysis, is once the supply gets taken off and production gets decreased, how fast can that production come back on kind of determines the longer term value levels that I use.
And gold, have you thought about it as overvalued or undervalued?
Yeah, I mean, this is where it is. Gold trades as both a commodity and currency. And right now it's being traded as a commodity, not as a currency. And if we would have problems with this Federal Reserve liftoff, i.e., deflation would quickly turn into a lack of confidence in fiat currencies like the dollar, then the gold would be in the top five as undervalued. I think you'll know whether gold's undervalued in probably in the next 3 to 4 months if we get an actual rate increase by September, October time period, and the gold finds a bottom off of that, then you can start, I think, thinking that the undervalue level's been hit.
Coming back to commodities directly, agricultural commodities, the weather looks like it should be good across the Midwest, both the eastern and the western Corn Belt, at least for the week, maybe for a couple of weeks. Drew Lerner, I've talked to already today, and I know he's going to tell us that August probably looks pretty decent too at this point in terms of longer-term forecast. What are you hearing about the condition of the crop, and what does and how have you incorporated that into any numbers, if you already have them, for the August 12th? Crop production and WASDE figures?
Yeah, the mindset that I have, and based upon the crop conditions, when I look at all the states versus what the trade is probably trading right now, is probably night and day. It's probably one extreme versus the other. I see a declining yield coming based upon crop conditions and farmer reports of walking the fields, nitrogen losses that are irreversible at this point, fear that even the good corn will have significant tip back. Those things are just not being talked about right now in the trade, Todd. What's talked about in Chicago right now from my conversations is the idea that things are looking better from the windshield. There are some issues in the western Corn Belt for hotter, drier conditions, but that should be alleviated this weekend. So this weekend's rain in the western Corn Belt, I would say, is pretty important to the short-term trader. But the rainfall looks heaviest in Iowa and Minnesota. Trade's not really going to worry about South Dakota and Nebraska that much unless they start to see the crop conditions drop there in good to excellent ratings. And so I see a lower yield from 166.8 and 46 bushels. In 2010, our final yield was 152. In 2011, our final yield was 146.8. And I don't think those numbers are accurate, but I think that they're closer to the trend of where we're headed as opposed to a mindset that it's holding at 165 plus. And some in Chicago, I think this week, have even started to talk about it could be above 166, and it's actually increasing again. I find that very hard to believe.
Turning your attention to the livestock, lean hogs jumped today. Why was that in the October contract?
A couple things. We've seen some big slaughter data come out of the Chinese government in the last few days, and they've cut production by about 6% for the first half of this year versus last year at the same time. And I think that caught the market's attention. We've also seen a pretty big decline in the weights for the Iowa-Minnesota hogs. That would suggest that you're pulling quite a bit of hogs forward at this point. You've got bigger kill, but you've got a lot lighter hog coming to the market. And I think that's a very welcome sight to the market in general. The other thing that I noticed in this week's advertisements in Kansas City was pork took the top three spots. It has been all summer long that I've seen pork not take the top three spots for featuring. And I think pork's finally getting its advertisement space because it is so profitable to retail, you know, for the retail featuring.
Anything that happened today that changed your mind about paper positions versus cash sales that we talked about this morning?
No, in fact, the new lows in the crude oil and the fact that we saw the gold shrink back towards its lows on the day keep me in that mindset of being very defensive because of the macro fundamentals.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great week, sir.
Oh, you too. That is Mike Zuzulow. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. You can hear him again both the morning and the afternoon programs on our website. The address there is willag.org. Here are some of the agricultural headlines for the day. Nearly 500 organizations and associations, part of the Coalition for Safe and Affordable Food, have sent a letter to Congress urging members to support H.R. 1599. That's the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act. Last week, the House Agriculture Committee passed the bipartisan bill by voice vote, and it is expected to be voted on by the House later this week. H.R. 1599 outlines when and if a GMO food would need to be labeled, and consequently, what constitutes a non-GMO label. We'll stay in D.C., relatively speaking, in the political side of agriculture. The National Corn Growers Association, NCGA, has taken another big step toward providing the driving public with lower gas prices and more fuel choices, including better access to higher blends of homegrown American ethanol. NCGA has announced the investment of an additional $500,000 to a program called Prime the Pump, which seeks to expand fueling infrastructure capable of delivering higher blends of ethanol fuel to American consumers. This increases NCGA's commitment to $2 million in the last year. Prime the Pump uses the funds pledged by corn farmers as matching funds to secure grants under the recently announced program by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA's Biofuel Infrastructure Partnership. It makes $100 million in grants available. In addition to NCGA's increased funding commitment, several state affiliates are strongly supporting proposed Prime the Pump projects within their respective states. Prime the Pump is aimed at retailers with high volumes and multiple locations. Retailers have to commit to a five-year marketing program. E15 must be offered at all dispensers under the canopy. Signage must be on the street and must include E15, and retailers must agree to actively promote the fuel. On the subject of fuel, the Senate Finance Committee has voted unanimously to move forward the tax extenders provision that are critical to agriculture. Included in the package was the $1 per gallon biodiesel tax credit. National Biodiesel Board's Director of Federal Affairs, Ann Steckel, says advancement through the committee is a big win for the biodiesel industry.
We're really pleased to see that the Senate has done a two-year bill. Clearly, we appreciate having a longer-term certainty within the tax code, and as Congress continues to talk about comprehensive tax reform, we're going to be advocating for a longer-term bill. But for right now, the Senate was able to put together a two-year extension, and so we're very pleased to have that support, and we'll work to make sure that that's signed into law later this year.
And Ann Steckel says the fact the biodiesel tax credit was approved by such a large margin in the Senate Finance Committee speaks volumes, she thinks, about its chances for passage in the full Senate and the House.
The bill that comes out of the Senate Finance Committee has generally been the bill that has been signed into law. It's the base of the bill that's signed into law. Usually the Senate moves first on these sorts of issues, and then the House continues to debate and have their hearings and bring together different tax extenders packages they support. And in the end, they get together and come up with a comprehensive package. And so we feel that we're in a very good position to have our tax credit extended.
Also included in the extenders package were wind production and cellulosic biofuels tax credits, as well as Section 179 expensing and bonus depreciation measures. And finally today, Missouri is at odds with Illinois over some levees along the river. Missouri's U.S. senators will assist Governor Jay Nixon there in his request for a disaster declaration in 70 counties due to continued severe weather and flooding. Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri says she and Roy Blunt will write letters expressing support for the declaration the governor has requested, but McCaskill adds that her office will continue to look into the levee situation along the Mississippi River.
I believe there's a lot of people in northeast Missouri and down around and down into Pike County and close Lincoln County, closer to St. Louis that believe that some of the levee activity on the Illinois side has been inappropriate in terms of the size of the levees that have been erected, and that it may be forcing more water than it should be forcing into the, onto the Missouri side of the river.
McCaskill said she has talked with several people in the area about that assertion.
And we're going to try to look into it and see if there is any validity to it and if there's anything we need to do to make sure that the appropriate size of levees are being built on both sides of the rivers in order to keep the flow of the Mississippi where it should be and not force the waters unfairly onto one side or the other.
That's Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill talking about levees along the Mississippi River, and wraps up our look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. It's Wednesday, the 22nd day of July. Let's check the cash grain market with the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana. Alex Reed is on the phone line to take up all basis levels and crop conditions in his area. But Alex, I'd like, I think, to start with margins for the ethanol production plant that you operate there called Climbers. How is it doing?
Yeah, sure. Margins have been pretty steady here recently. I know that the board, you know, we had a rally a couple weeks ago this past week, kind of turned back down, but margins altogether have stayed pretty stable. Just the stocks that we have out there, nothing too much has changed so far. But despite the fact that it is the summer and more gas is being used, recently margins have been pretty steady.
You have had in your area to really bid up the basis levels in order to attract corn. Where do you stand today?
We are posted 5 over today. That is correct. Basis has definitely improved tremendously in this area. We were posted option price last week. Several other locations nearby have also improved their bids, just trying to get corn moving. Despite the rally that we had, corn did move, but with the condition of the new crop, it's tough for guys to let go of their old crop when it looks like new crop's in trouble right now.
So your belief is there is plenty of old crop there, it's just not moving on the idea that the new crop may not replenish supplies?
Yes, more or less. Plenty may be too strong of a word, but there is old crop left, and it's tough for guys to let go of it right now.
What are crop conditions on the ground like today?
It's kind of widespread. All in all, there are tremendous issues. Further north of here you go, it's much worse than further south. But, the crop altogether, it looks pretty rough right now. It does, corn and beans both.
Do you know if you go to the east towards Ohio, does it get worse as well?
A few areas, it's very sporadic over in that direction just because they planted much different time periods. So, it kind of depends on where you go.
And talk to me just a little bit about basis for soybeans.
Basis soybeans definitely still getting strong. People concerned about what's out there, what will be there for fall. So it's continued to improve as well. The processors are definitely bidding very high to get beans rolling before guys get out into the field and harvest starts.
And your old and new crop bids for the day?
Yep. Corn right now we are 407 cash. Beans we are 1025.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Alex Reed. He is with the Anderson's Climbers facility. That's near Logansport, Indiana. Back in 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the weather forecast.
On this day in agricultural history in 1822, Gregor Mendel was born. Mendel was an Austrian botanist whose work was the foundation of the science of genetics. Working mainly with garden peas, some 28,000 plants over 7 years, he discovered what was to become known as the laws of heredity. Mendel coined at least 2 present-day terms in genetics, recessiveness and dominance. In 1915, Sir Sanford Fleming died. He devised the present system of time zones while working for the Canadian Pacific Railway. In 1954, the Miller Pesticide Amendment was passed. It established procedures used by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to determine the maximum allowable pesticides that can remain on raw agricultural products for human consumption. The amendment stated no additive shall be deemed to be safe if it is found to induce cancer when ingested by man or animal, or if it is found after tests which are appropriate for the evaluation of safety of food additives to induce cancer in man or animals. And in 1993, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission approved final rules prohibiting the practice of dual trading by floor brokers unless an exemption is granted by the CFTC. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Let's check the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Things have dried out nicely, though it looks like we've got some cool temperatures in the offing. What kind of conditions will cross both the western and eastern Corn Belt over the next week?
Well, I really think it looks pretty darn good, to be honest with you. We are drying down a little bit, but we also still have a good pattern here of alternating shower and thunderstorm activity along with some sunny days and temperatures that will be seasonal. We are going to cool down a little bit, but we're only going to cool down back to normal. So we're really, I think we got 1 or 2 days here that's going to be slightly cooler bias, but we'll see a lot of 80-degree highs coming up over the next week with some 90s expected in the western Corn Belt, lower 90s primarily. You get on the west side of the Missouri River, then we'll probably start seeing some middle 90s once in a while. But that's about as warm as we're going to get. You know, we have all that moisture on and in the ground, and that's really going to be fed back into the atmosphere, keep that humidity high. So it's going to be difficult for us to get really excessively hot anytime real soon, with the exception of maybe some of those western Corn Belt locations. But we need a ridge of high pressure in order to get those temperatures soaring, and that's not something that's in the cards for right now.
We haven't really had to ask whether it's going to rain over the past couple of months. I suppose we ought to this time around.
Well, the answer is we don't have to really ask, because there will be some periods of showers and thunderstorms coming up. It looks like our first round will actually be a broken line of showers and thunderstorms that will come across the region as a cool front tries to come across the area. This will occur as we go from Thursday afternoon into Friday. It may actually take Friday into Saturday before it gets all the way through the eastern Corn Belt. So it'll be a weak frontal boundary with, you know, like I said, a broken line of showers and thunderstorms. Most likely, the majority of the region probably won't get more than a half inch of moisture out of it. There will be some locally strong thunderstorms embedded in there, but nothing that's going to cause any further concerns as far as the widespread flooding we've had here recently. We'll have another round of showers and thunderstorms with another frontal system, maybe Monday into Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, as it progresses from northwest to southeast. And again, it will be offering at least some timely precipitation to help us keep on the right foot here as far as seeing our crops continue in good shape.
And that will put us through the end of the month of July. Have you looked forward into August? Soybeans are a crop that really need to have weather in August to mature properly. What kind of conditions do you think might happen?
Yeah, I think that we'll see a little bit more ridginess in the plains in August, and that should warm us up and dry us down a little bit across parts of the plains and western Corn Belt. Don't know that that's necessarily the recipe for a problem, but we will see more typical summertime weather where we firm up the soil and create a little bit of stress for some of the crop. A little bit of that stress would be really welcome for the soybean crop. It really needs to be pushed a little bit, and I think we can still see that happen at some point in August. It's not going to last long. I think we'll cool back down again eventually, but it's going to be a good month, I think.
Anything across the planet we should be aware of today?
You know, it's amazing to me, with all the hype about El Nino, how well this Earth is operating right now. We have nothing in the way of serious problems in key crop areas like China or India or Australia. All three usually have some influence of negative means to form an El Nino event, and we don't. It certainly isn't the big disaster that was advertised.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated, and I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.